Adequate notice of this meeting is required by Chapter 231 PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 8, 2016, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Deborah, could you please call the roll?
Ms. Bona.
Here.
Mr. Impelazzari.
Here.
Ms. Lapodi.
Here.
Ms. Mathen.
Here.
Mr. Tickton.
Here.
Mayor Allentough.
Here. I'd like to start out by recognizing that our former mayor has come to the meeting. I appreciate that. I'm sure you're here to gloat, but nonetheless, it is good to see you.
You duly noted that she's gloating.
Yes, yes. duly noted that she is gloating and pink cheeks of happiness. A couple of things before we get started with the consent agenda. I have a list here. We've gotten quotes for the cameras at the water plant and the sewer plant. We're also trying to get a quote for one more camera here. As it stands, we can see part of the parking lot and part of the firehouse. We want to put another camera in to cover the firehouse and possibly the front. Trailer quotes, we're waiting for, you've probably noticed the prison out in the parking lot. We're getting additional quotes for, we're calling them fire boxes, but the boxes in which the fire department can hang their gear, their tanks, whatever. Just either simple shelves or simple shelves and boxes. Jerry Riccardi, our friend from JCP&L, needs to do two safety presentations sometime in April. I'm asking OEM, Fire, and First Aid, one of which is here, to get together with Kelly and schedule and see if we can get some people out there. He does a lot of favors for us. So you may or may not have noticed that the AED is the defibrillator is mounted now on the wall with a big sign above it, which is very helpful. And the First Aid has asked for an additional piece of equipment, which we'll talk about later on in the program. Personal note, if you go away on vacation, please, please, please call the state police. Tell them that you will not be around for a couple of weeks. Give them the telephone number where you can be reached. If you don't mind, also come down to the Borough Hall and tell the our clerk or Kelly that you're going on vacation and where you can be reached. Unfortunately, it's almost funny. The fire department found, I'll say this once in my life, thank goodness for Jehovah's Witnesses, because when they went to a house and they discovered water pouring out the front door, they came down and told us. We had to have the fire department and the state police break into one of the houses as water came pouring out. There was a little note on the kitchen table that said, stop delivery of the newspaper, forward the mail, and turn off the heat. They went down to 2 degrees. All the pipes broke on the second floor, and the house is pretty well destroyed. We have another house on Farm Lane that just went through the same thing. So for your and our safety, please. We also have the comments. I don't know if all of you received the letter regarding the residential lease at the deli. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we ought to deal with that. We'll put that, I guess, under new business if somebody wants to bring that up. Okay, let's move on to public comment on the consent agenda. Does anybody in the public have any comments on the consent agenda? Hey, Tom, would you like to look over the consent agenda before we move out of the public portion?
I consent.
Thank you. Do I have a motion on the consent
first
agenda?
First, perhaps just, I said the appointment of the zoning officer. Perhaps let people know who we're appointing as zoning officer.
Okay, you want to pull that?
Background is and all.
You want to make a motion to pull that from the consent agenda?
No, I just want, before we vote, I just thought if we just...
We interviewed a gentleman, Jill and I interviewed him, and Stacy, a gentleman by the name of Joe McGrath, who has extensive experience doing home inspections, is well known to our current zoning officers and has came down to interview for the zoning officer position. For those of you who don't know, Ralph, our zoning officer, is gone for about 6 months out of the year. And John, our housing officer, who has been filling that position, has basically said, look, it's just too much. I have too many other jobs. I can't do it. I need a lead zoning officer. Joe McGrath came in very highly recommended by John Marini. We interviewed him for an extended period of time. He's highly overqualified and nonetheless wants to get into municipal zoning. So we are basically, by this resolution, replacing him, replacing Ralph with Mr. McGrath.
Has Ralph resigned, or have we gotten a resolution?
Ralph has not resigned. Ralph is aware that this is going on, and we'll have to have that discussion with Ralph.
I see. You just don't want to be in a position having two zoning officers when we're paying both of them.
Well, right now, John has been gone for a couple of months and expect to be
Ralph.
Gone. Oh, Ralph. Yeah.
Ralph, yes.
And we expect him to be gone for some time. So
okay.
We're paying somebody else to do his job right now.
Yes. Okay. Right, we'll move the consent agenda.
Thank you.
Second.
Any discussion at the table? Deborah, could you please call the roll?
Ms. Bonin.
Aye.
Mr. Impelazzari.
Aye.
Ms. Lapodi.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tipton.
Aye.
We now move on to ordinances. The final reading and public hearing for Bond Ordinance 16-003. Do I have a motion? I'm sorry. Let's open it up for the public hearing. Mm-hmm. Do we have any comments on Bond Ordinance providing for the rehabilitation of an elevated water tower and appropriating $210,000 therefore, including the issuance of $200,000 in bonds and notes? Not a peep, Beth?
No.
Okay. Any other comments? Then we'll close the public hearing. Do I have a motion on 16-003?
Yes, I move 16-003.
Second.
The clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Bonin.
Aye.
Mr. Impelazzari.
Aye.
Ms. Lapodi.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tipton.
Aye.
We now move to reports of council committees. John?
Okay, we are scheduling the brush pickup, and we're working with the Environmental Commission. They are about to embark on eradication of invasive species. We'd like to coordinate with the brush pickup, the general brush pickup in the town. And we're working to determine the timing that's good for them and for the residents as well. We're also working to coordinate with Hightstown about leaf pickup. That is not resolved either. Hydrant sticks are here to be installed. They are essentially flags that get bolted onto fire hydrants so the fire department can see them when they're covered with snow. Who's going to install them is still up for debate, but they're here. On Nine Tamara has a tree on borough property leaning towards the house, and we're looking into having it removed and just dropped where it is, and that's tentative also.
I think if I can, Michael. John? I'd like to recognize John Vo, who is the captain of our first aid squad. Are you here for a specific reason or just enjoying the
The meeting.
Okay.
And answer any first aid question you guys have.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. As far as the community development and code enforcement, I'll try to see Mr. Marini be in tomorrow, so hopefully I will get to see him. And I want to find, when I last spoke with him about the abandoned property list, he said he wanted a copy of the statute, so I sent that to him, so hopefully he's had a chance to digest that by now. We can discuss that and, in cooperation with Alan Malik, move forward on that. The in terms of the overall, because I'm doing environmental health and safety as well, we got the request for the updates on the hazard mitigation report, which we had planned, with hazard mitigation plan, which we had filed a year ago. We basically had we had identified wildfire as the hazard that we were concerned, like most of the rest of the county was concerned with flooding, but we're concerned with wildfire. Basically, we had three aspects of them where we indicated we wanted to do something. One was the firehouse. Of course, obviously, we can update them on what happened, where we are on that. On brush pickup, we had said that we wanted to try to encourage people to get the brush out of the woods behind their houses, and that we would try to have more frequent brush pickups. We said more than once or twice a year, and obviously twice is an improvement on once. But I think it would be interesting to see how much response we get in this brush pickup, and if it makes sense to have one and maybe have it three times a year. And we said we'd try to have it more often. If we could get people to really cooperate, maybe we could have one in the spring, one in the summer, one in the autumn, if we could arrange it with Hightstown. Mm-hmm. But as we'd said, that was something we wanted to look into. The other thing was coordination with the Forest Fire Service, which April gave me some information about that the fire company is trying to give providing information to homeowners about defensible spaces around their properties, and maybe get updating on how far they've gotten with that and include that in the report. The environmental, Eitan may want to tell us some more about environmental, but the area that I've been involved with, the aerial photography with the creek, county mosquito service, which now it's not a commission anymore, it's now part of it's now under the health department. They did do the photography, so we got some pretty good pictures of what it looked like. It's very interesting. The ecology has totally changed because the project several years ago in the past has been to try to revive the forest. The forest isn't there anymore. It's now become a marsh. But I went down there. I was walking around. The water is flowing, which is basically a pond has formed near the culvert, which just extends on both sides of the culvert. But you go beyond that, the water clearly is flowing. It just sort of branches out. It's all over the area there. But the aerial photography indicated that the stream comes together more as an outlet that comes off Farm Lane with the stormwater, and between Katz and Hartley properties, and in back in the woods, and you can see it where the stream joins that outflow there, and it becomes more of a stream after that. It just was interesting, but the problem that the county had indicated was that, they will certainly do, they'll be attended as they are with any event with mosquito treatment, that probably we couldn't get any DEP permits to do anything on because now there's a new habitat situation, new environmental, new ecology has been created there that, that we couldn't disrupt. And it's not woods anymore, but it is something else, and we shouldn't disrupt it. So that's where we are with that. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the other things that was brought up in the Environmental Commission was the street cleaning, that leaves were clogging the drains, but Ulrich and I walked around on Sunday, and it looks like it's already done.
Storm Thanks. Basics got clean today.
We need a new recycling coordinator. Michael, you might be able to help with that. Millstone's director is certified.
Yeah, that's what I was told by the Millstone clerk. I saw her at the CDBG meeting, and that's what she mentioned, that just what we're doing with the recycling. And I said, were you still using her site? But then now we've gotten the message saying he's not available anymore, but their public works director has now gotten certification, so this would seem to be something that we can approach Millstone and either hire him directly or else do it as a joint, as an interlocal, more probably better do it as an interlocal service with Millstone.
Why wouldn't our public works director be certified?
I don't know. I suppose she could.
That's a lot of classes, Jill.
Another thing. You can get him. But we say he's certified now. He's gotten the certification now, so at some point in the future, maybe Kelly would want to get it. What happened?
I had a meeting with Millstone's mayor last week about the possibility of getting additional contributions from Millstone for our first aid squad.
Mm-hmm.
He was very surprised at the statistics that I presented to him.
They do three times as much As many calls at a millstone as to Roosevelt.
As to Roosevelt, yeah. 2.5 times. I forget what the exact number is, but
yeah.
And we have follow-up meetings, so I can include that in the meetings if that's something we want to do.
Yes, I think that's a good idea, yes.
Right, so specifically, we're talking about shared service for...
Recycling coordinator.
Just recycling coordinator?
Okay. Yeah.
We had that actually before we hired EarthSites. We had a shared service agreement with them, and then the recycling coordinator retired.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Brennan?
No, I don't have anything other than I put a GIF notice in front of any council member who has not yet signed up to go for the training. We would appreciate it. There is one very conveniently in Upper Freehold. They will have a couple more. I'm sure they'll schedule some. That's probably going to be the most convenient for location that you're going to get. But it is important that you attend. And we do receive $250 credit on our premium for every council member that attends. And it is good training to have. So we'll encourage you to contact Kelly to sign up.
Which day is it again?
March 3rd.
March 3rd.
And that's from 6 to 8:30.
Right, I have it down on my calendar.
7:30.
Counselor?
We are redrafting the towing specifications. You may recall that in January we rejected because the only bid that we got was not conforming. And we're going to eliminate the requirement for a bond and consent of surety, which seemed to be the holdup. And we can rely upon the insurance certificate that we'll get in the hold harmless. We're going to do that and bring it back. And we'll have to leave some time to go through that process so the contract will start some point later in the year. And the other thing I have is that I'm told secondhand that all of the ordinances that were not enforceable in the municipal court now are enforceable. Mr. Marini told me that they have been approved, and he can write as many violation notices.
Very
as
good.
Wishes.
Were any of our ordinances not approved?
Or no.
Everything in the book is okay then?
That's what I heard secondhand.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
It'll be good to verify that. Okay. Yeah.
Ms. Malkin.
Well, Jack Rint requested the first disbursement of the first aid budget, and so I made arrangements for them, which they either should have received or will very soon shortly receive the first part of their budget. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Ms. Lapote. Dr. Lapote.
I have a couple things, but I'm going to save the water and sewer for last. I'm going to start with the controlled burn situation. So we got this press release today about how the State Forest Fire Service is beginning their prescribed burns. But in fact, they began already. And if you take a ride up by the cemetery, you'll see blackened fields on both sides. They burned the fields on the way up to the cemetery. They also were doing some burning over in the Assanpink over the weekend, so I took a ride to go watch, because I saw, like, big black smoke, so I thought I'd go see what was going on. And there was an individual who had been horseback riding in the area and then came out to a field that was on fire. She was quite startled by it. They didn't close the park. They just do prescribed burns wherever they're going to do them. So in talking to the fellow, I said, well, why do you do this? Is it just to cut down on the brush because of the wildfire threat? And he said, oh, no. We're very concerned about these new tick-borne illnesses, which have started happening around here. And then he went on to tell me about some of these. So I've printed out a couple of things about the tick-borne illnesses, and we should maybe post these. This new illness is called the Powassan virus, and it's found in the same tick that causes Lyme disease, and we all know how many people in Roosevelt have gotten Lyme disease. But this Powassan virus, within 2 to 3 hours of being bitten by the tick, a person may develop headaches, nausea, vomiting, muscle weakness, memory loss, and speech difficulty. And so it can lead to encephalitis, meningitis. It's just really bad. This is a really bad one. And the symptoms might mimic that of a stroke. It's really... So I'm actually very glad they're doing these controlled burns. And we've got these new tick-borne illnesses, and hopefully this will cut down on some of the ticks that are around. The other one is called Borrelia miyamotoi disease, or BMD for short. And that one has flu-like symptoms, fever, chills, muscle pain. It can also lead to meningoencephalitis. So, problem area for Roosevelt residents. We should probably put something in the borough bulletin. I mean, this seems...
Could you write an article, please?
I don't know that I'm qualified to write an article.
You're probably more qualified than anyone else around here. You have more information than anyone else.
Maybe the First Aid Squad should write an article. I mean, it's a medical thing. I don't... Anyway, we got bad ticks in town, and yep. Hopefully we're trying to eliminate them.
Are they also peddling?
What?
I said, are they also peddling?
Yeah.
Can we get them under all the same, same ordinance?
If only. All right, let's do the water and sewer stuff. I have given you a short PowerPoint. No? Yes? Short PowerPoint on water and sewer update. Glenn Barnes came in from the University of North Carolina. He and his colleague Allison spent about 5 hours here going through some of the data that they needed for the affordability analysis. And what they're doing is taking our water and sewer bills and then overlaying the census data and coming up with what percent of income is going to water and sewer bills. And he's going to provide us with a more detailed report, which will go to all the council members. But based on the preliminary analysis, some residents are already paying more than is affordable. They're paying up to 18% of their income for water and sewer bills. That's huge. That's really large. So we did talk a little bit about how the census data could be affected by the folks living in Solar Village who have their water and sewer bill pretty much subsidized from the subsidy that they get from the USDA. So that would throw off some of these numbers, but at the low end, our water and sewer bill is already unaffordable. Even those that can afford the current rates, our rates are going to have to go up for some of the repairs that we're undertaking. So it may become unaffordable to more residents. Another question that he brought up is, are the rates set at the correct level? Right now, we have a baseline level that's based on people using 6,000 gallons of water per month, which is pretty high for consumption. So what he was asking is, do most people pay just the base rate, or do people pay for over 6,000? And how many pay for over 6,000? And should we, for those people who might be, you know, one or two person households, retired, on a fixed income, if they're not using up to the 6,000 gallons per month, should we have a lower rate? In other words, set our base rate at maybe 5,000 gallons a month and then have it escalate above that.
I think the council went through this several years ago and came up with the 6,000 at this rate because that was the minimum, and I see Beth nodding over there, that was the minimum amount necessary to be collected to operate the plant.
But you also based it on many other towns and what they set there. space usage as?
So, interestingly, other towns have now decreased their base usage to 5,000 gallons a month, and the reason is that they really want people to conserve. And so they're trying to have the base rate at lower numbers and then have an escalator for people who use above that to encourage them to conserve their water usage.
Right, but all I was saying was that the competing issue there is that our cost of operating the system is basically, you know, to each according to his need, is basically simply divided among the ratepayers. And so if you lower both the rate and the minimum, then you may not have enough money in the budget to operate the plan. So we just need to look at that.
No, I mean, obviously, we would charge whatever is needed to operate the plant. However, if we had a lower base rate, it might encourage more conservation. And those who use more water would be paying more, yeah. And they'd be paying the freight for the extra at the water plant.
What would we do with the conserved water?
It stays in the ground, and that would be just fine.
Let's say probably to take a little more study. Okay, thank you.
Right, I'm not done.
Oh no, I know. I meant thank you for your response. I see the slides.
Okay.
Okay.
And of course, after the two water breaks that had occurred. Maybe we should be taking a closer look at those accounts that are over 24,000 because maybe it would indicate that their pipes had burst in the house. We only look at the water usage every 2 months, but if we see a very high usage and the person is away in Florida on vacation,
that'd be a pretty good sign.
We might want to take a closer look at what's going on in the house. I had not thought of that use of this data before the incidents of this past week. So we have our new engineer, Manuel Ponte, is studying the water system. And what he's looking at is the throughput information, hydraulics on both the water and sewer plant. How much water is used throughout the town? How much do we use for backwash? How much is lost through leaky pipes? Can we try and narrow down the areas where there's leakage from our water mains so that when we apply for funding from NJEIT for replacing water mains that are perhaps susceptible to breakage, we would look at those that have a leak and prioritize those much higher. So he's trying to look at that, and our NJEIT project for replacement of the water mains is at $1.3 million. That was what it was estimated by our previous engineer. Manuel wants to take a closer look at that application. And so the more detailed engineering drawings are due by March 1. We are not going to get them there by March 1. We're going to defer this project until we get a better handle on where the leakage is actually occurring.
And they'll let us roll it over?
I have an email into the engineer who said, should be no problem. Then I have a panicked email back. What are you doing, Jill? We need a conference call. And I explained what we're doing, and we'll see how it goes. But we might have a conference call.
Okay.
Manuel also toured the wastewater plant, and he wanted throughput information there. And what he's trying to do is a mass balance on how much water is used at the water plant, how much is winding up at the sewer plant, where's the extra water coming from, and how much is there, which would be groundwater that's leaking into the pipes. The initial numbers that he got from Toby about how much sewage is being treated made no sense. The inflow was dramatically
less than what's going, no, it was dramatically more than what's going out, and yet it wasn't leaking all over the ground in the sewage treatment plant, so we suspect that the meters were not calibrated properly at the sewage treatment plant. And this morning, I was down there, and they had the calibration expert who was working on recalibration of the flow meters. There are two different flow meters. One uses ultrasound. One uses a velocity. And they need to just really get what the problem is. So as we were discussing putting off some of our EIT projects, we eventually came to the conclusion we should defer all the NJEIT projects. Because another one of the projects was to look at the trickling filters, the biological treatment at the sewage treatment plant. And we don't even have a handle on the amount of water that we're treating, much less where it's going, what it's doing. So we need to get a lot more information there. Is it possible that we could treat the sewage with less chemicals, save money on the chemicals, and instead do some other kind of treatment? So another one of the projects was to replace the mercury switches. When I talked to Manuel Ponte, he said, I'm not sure that is your highest priority right now. And so let's not spend money that until we're absolutely sure what the full plan is. We're also using a lot of clean water at the sewage treatment plant. And I hadn't realized this, I guess. But Manuel is very patient about talking with Toby and asking questions and asking questions and asking questions. We use drinking water to spray down that auger that is the bane of Toby's existence. It freezes up every winter, but brings the toilet paper and other sundry things up and dumps it into the trash rather than passing it through the plant. We use some drinking water for that.
What do we do? You reuse.
Other plants use their effluent and just bring it to the front of the plant and spray down. We're using fully treated drinking water to spray down a piece of equipment at the sewage treatment plant. Not sure we need water treated to that level to spray down an auger that moves toilet paper up a screw conveyor. So we'll take a look at that. We use drinking water to mix with the chlorine and the sulfur dioxide for the final treatment. Not sure we need drinking water for that either. And we use drinking water at the lab, and we probably do need drinking water for that. But so we'll be kind of we never metered the water that we use at the sewage treatment plant because the borough, it's borough property. We're using it. But maybe we need to take a closer look at some of these flows. If we're able to do something so that we allow better settling in the primary and secondary settling tanks, we don't have carryover of sludge into the chlorine contact tank, we might be able to use a system of ultraviolet for disinfection before we send the sewage out the treated sewage out into the stream. And if we did, we wouldn't be buying chlorine, we wouldn't be buying SO2. There's a lot of savings that we could have, and it would be better treatment. So we need to get a handle on this, and we're just not going to be ready to make decisions by March 1st about these. So some of the short-term issues that I see with the water and sewer plant is we have to get that restriction out of the manhole so that the backwash water will flow directly from the water plant into the sewer. And KTK, we awarded that work, and KTK needs to get out there and do that. And that's already approved by everybody here. We need to have that suite of work done that you just approved the ordinance tonight about fix the issues with the water tower. There was a moment of panic about the water tower this morning. A number of people noticed that water was pouring out the top of the tower and it was raining down.
And Kelly was kind enough to actually come to my house when I didn't answer her text immediately and get me to come out to the water tower and make sure that we knew what was going on. Toby was on his way into work. He was alerted to the issue, and it turns out it was a very minor thing that a sensor which detects whether the tower is full had been bumped over the weekend, and it was not sensing. and so the pump just kept pumping, and the tower just kept filling and overflowing and overflowing. Once Toby was able to restore that particular sensor, life returned to normal, but there was a moment of just, oh no, what's broken now? And then we still have to figure out, underneath the water tower, those valves that are in a temporary fix, we really need to figure out a more permanent fix for the valves.
That's not included in the $210,000?
No, it is not. That work is not included in that because the $210,000, it's actually $153,000 of it is for the actual work, never turns off the water to the water tower. All of the work that is being done can be performed with the water tower still in service. So there would be no point in rolling that into this particular work done at the water tower. Also, the work that's done in the water tower is kind of up on top, welding this and welding that. What we really need to do that fix is somebody who fixes valves and so forth. So it would be a different contractor. At least that's what Carmela Roberts told me when I questioned her about that.
So we couldn't get any advantage from the fact that we already have a crew out there that could turn it off and replace that, get rid of those valves?
We're not turning off the water during entire fix.
No, I understand that we're not turning it off now, but would it save us any money to have them turn it off?
She doesn't feel that it's the proper crew. She thinks it's the wrong crew.
Okay. But that's got to be done fairly soon.
Yes, it does, and that's why I put it down as a short-term issue. We need to get after that. Longer term, we have to consider these affordability study results. We should consider the rate structure. We have to, well, we'll hear from Manuel Ponte when he puts together his plan about what we think needs to be done for the Roosevelt Water and Sewer. But he assured me that any of the work that we do on the water and sewer plant, you know, will be useful in determining the value should we decide down the road that we want to sell those assets. We have to continue to pursue some public partnerships with neighboring towns, pursue legislation to have the sewer rates under the same kind of structure that the water rates are, so that you would have a regulatory scheme that's equal for both. And, of course, we have to continue to look for infrastructure grants. Flint, Michigan has been a wake-up call for all manner of infrastructure issues. And it is possible that the federal government will respond with additional funding for fixing infrastructure issues. And we certainly have infrastructure issues that we could use help.
Personal comment. Which this is keying into my concern. And my concern is that right now, interest rates are about as low as they're going to be for the next 20 years.
Uh-huh.
The longer we delay, the more it's going to cost us in interest. And the flip side of, I was looking at the last thing under longer term.
Yep.
The flip side is that the feds either don't increase the amount of funding available or do it very slowly, and Flint has woken up everybody else to come running into the into the state saying, okay, I'll take some of that money you have now, mm-hmm. which would sort of increase our competition for the same dollar.
Right.
So the sooner I think we can get
and some
this going, which also goes to the rolling over, because if we don't roll it over, we've got to start the process again, and that's going to delay us even further,
right.
And that's a big concern.
I hear you, and some of what Manuel has asked for from Toby, you know, Toby has been kind of busy putting out a number of other fires that seem to have happened along the way. And it's very difficult when you have one person as your licensed operator to meet the needs of gathering information for the next issue, as well as running the plant, as well as fixing what goes wrong with that plant on a daily basis. It's a real challenge. Manuel has been very careful to try not to overburden Toby with information requests, but, I mean, in order to figure out what's wrong with that plant, we need the hydraulic loading, so we need all of those numbers. And it's kind of one thing at a time.
There's not some team of engineers we could bring in on a short term to do some of that work?
Well, Manuel is going to propose a sampling event that will be a 24-hour sampling event around the sewage treatment plant. But he needs to get some numbers first before he can figure out where the samplers need to be placed. But yes, he's looking at an outside laboratory to do that and not have Toby do it.
Thank you.
I still have more.
Oh.
Of course. So there are a number of high school students that are looking for public service projects. And I just would like the whole council to think about things that they would like to see done by a cadre of students. There may be some environmental commission work. They might be able to help with some of the invasive species removal. And they'd be fun projects, and they would learn something at the same time as we would get some public service work done.
And the best part is they're looking for repetitive projects. So if you're talking about invasive species, if you're talking about trail cleanup, they're talking about doing this on an annual basis. So they'll bring in a group of high school students, and you know, you get 5 or 10 hours of their time to do. You know, obviously ahead of time you want to plan this, but they can come in and participate in any of those programs.
As far as invasive species type work, what type of liability insurance would we need for them if they have to use cutting tools of any sort?
I think we'd have to sit down with the school first, find out what their insurance is, get the waivers.
Is vegetation that encroaches out onto the public roads pushed back? And there's a lot of it. I couldn't even see the storm drain directly above my, to the right of my house, because everything now that's assessing property, so you're running also into state regs on destroying vegetation and state land and things like that. But I can think of a few things that, you know, along the lines of just trimming back vegetation.
Let's get a list. For those of you who haven't met him, Mr. McGrath is here. The gentleman we just appointed as our zoning officer. He was late, so we're going to take it back, but nonetheless, you should see what it was he looked like for the 5 minutes that he was employed. But Deborah's going to have to get some information from you, license, passport, whatever you got for the I-9s. Okay.
I have one more.
Yes, ma'am.
One of our employees expressed concern about a particular piece of correspondence that he was to have received and he didn't get it in his box. And so that prompted me to start a tracking system for correspondence. So we will now have a tracking system for when letters come into the office. They will be opened uniformly. They will be date stamped. There will be a tracking mechanism that says who is responsible for answering that piece of correspondence, and then a tracking, you know, a tickler that goes out that says, hey, you're supposed to answer this. You got 1 week. Get it done. That sort of thing until they're overdue. And then I'm not sure what we do then.
Panic.
Now I'm done.
Old business.
I just have one question. For the situation that we had with the unintended massive use of water at that house, presumably the meter is going to show up this very large number. Now, how are we going to deal with that in terms of billing people for unintended? Are we going to bill them for the unintended use, or should we?
Why would we not bill them for the unintended
use? I'm asking you, what would we have done? That's all.
Well, we didn't charge them for the state police call or the fire or public works. But since it's incumbent on all of us to use common sense when going away to Florida for a month, I personally wouldn't have a problem with charging them for the water. I mean, it's kind of adding insult to injury, but it wasn't because, you know, we had a faulty meter or we did something
sure,
wrong.
Sure, it wasn't the borough's fault, that's for sure. No, I just wanted to raise the question and how people wanted to deal with it.
Does anybody disagree?
How much you'd be looking at? General, it's been 3 inches, 6 inches of water. How much additional cost would that be, I guess? You know, thousands?
I don't know.
The other
would
is
depend, it would depend on how, when it broke, how long it's been running, but
we don't know.
We don't know.
I mean, I think that the simple you want to kick the can down the road is to build them and see if they come in and request a rebate and then talk about it then.
Okay. Just wanted to see if you want to deal with it preemptively.
Old business. Fire chief appointment. As many of you probably know, the last time we had a discussion of reconsidering Mr. Archer's desire to be fire chief, we decided that we needed him to come in and answer some questions. We sent him a certified letter. We sent him a regular letter. We sent him an email. He sent back an email, which I did not have distributed because there was some sense that he might come in. I win the pool, by the way, Kelly. Basically, he said, I will not.
I told you.
I'm not sure I'll be around on the 22nd, so I cannot confirm my attendance. We already met to discuss my positions, which are pretty cut and dry. I will try to hold it together if we have a commitment on a building that we can operate out of, and if not, then I resign. We as a group have done far more than any of us expected. I've surpassed my expectations. However, without town support, the heartbeat is dead. That's something I can't make happen. I have done the best I could with what we had to work with. I'm very proud of all my guys for the feats we have accomplished. We have garnered the respect of many fire companies and towns, so I am content with our performance and only wish that our town gave us the respect outside towns have. So I will go back and read the second sentence again. We already met to discuss my positions, which are pretty cut and dry. I will try to hold it together if we have a commitment on a building that we can operate out of, and if not, then I resign. So in our last chapter, there was a split in the circuits about whether or not we wanted him to be, we wanted to reconsider the fact that we had declined to accept him as chief. Has anybody changed their mind based on that, or do you want to go through a vote? Looking at that, it seems to me that the position is, number one, this is important enough to me that I'm not going to bother showing up to answer the council's questions, which, to be perfectly honest, does annoy me a bit. And the second is, if you don't build a building that I like, then I quit. So I'm not sure that's the answer that, I mean, I really didn't expect to see that in writing, but now that I see it in writing, my inclination would be to say, we have Mr. Sook. If they want to, you know, I believe he's the only other person that's qualified, licensed to be a chief. He's currently was voted the assistant chief, which would make him the chief. Unless we decide to reinstate Mr. Archer. So do I have any motions?
I'd like to state that while I voted to keep Mr. Archer as the chief, there's a couple things in that letter that I find a little troubling. A, he did not come. Second, he did not offer even an alternative date to talk to us. And I'm just getting a sense of take it or leave it from Mr. Archer. And I don't like, we have done everything we can to try to get that firehouse built, and I don't think that we need an antagonistic tone towards people who really basically supported him for a very long time. And as long as Chris is eligible to be the chief and certified, I have no problem with Chris being chief.
Michael.
Okay. I'm just concerned that he doesn't show up and that he doesn't seem to think it's important to show up. But I mean, his letter wasn't a letter saying I'm quitting. His letter's based, I mean, I construe his letter as saying I'm here until we reach the point that it's clear that nothing is going to be done. And at that point, I shall resign. But for the present, he's not resigning. So, you know, of course, you can say he's nothing to resign from since
right.
he's not been appointed. But nonetheless, his subordinates seem to think he's a fire chief nonetheless. What is Mr. Sook's view on the subject? Does he want to be chief under these circumstances? Does he?
I think Chris is fine with being chief. He just wants to know, is he or isn't he? And I have suggested, as others have suggested, that perhaps this was not a meeting for him to attend,
mm-hmm.
Since it could, you know, get a little uncomfortable. So, I mean, if we want him to come, I'm sure we can have him come. But in the several conversations I've had with him, he said, fine. You know, we asked him about the certification. I asked him about how many people he thought might leave the fire department, how many would be left, whether they could operate under that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, that all that was okay.
Well, what if he continues as assistant chief and our mayor and council just deal with him as the assistant chief? He's in effect acting chief.
That's fine. That's effectively
he's
acting chief.
He's in effect acting chief. He's acting chief.
What would be the point of that?
Because that leaves Mr. Archer, when Mr. Archer decides he wants to come to a meeting and talk to us, then that leaves open the possibility of his coming to a meeting and talking to us. And perhaps we can, you know, we can address whatever concerns anybody has.
I think the problem with that is a real practical problem, okay? You're supposed to have a chief, an assistant chief, a treasurer.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right? They need to plan for their budget, their equipment, events, training events with other facilities, and if we keep saying, well, you know what, you can run this along, but at any time we may pop somebody else back in there,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem.
Yeah, sure.
The other problem we have, and I just remembered, was we also have Mr. Archer appointing people as he goes along, and it's becoming very uncomfortable in there. I mean, he's appointing people who don't qualify for the positions he's appointing him for, and nobody can stand up and say, okay, well, it's been determined I'm
okay.
Now in charge or not in charge.
It's okay,
that's
fine.
The problem
that's
I see
fine.
With it. Right, it's
yeah, okay.
Right,
I'll go along with it.
But this is an open discussion among you guys.
Sure.
I'm not.
I think that we have bent over backwards in trying to accommodate Mr. Archer. We first voted at your urging to not reappoint him as chief. He was upset. Some of his men were upset, so you met with him. You did not have a satisfactory meeting with him. So we again discussed it at another meeting where, with an informal show of hands, it was 3-2 against reappointing him. But again, we didn't take any action because we said that he could come and talk to us. Now, he's clearly not interested in any kind of mutual understanding or compromise. I think to leave the position open and hope, you know, thinking that possibly he'll come back at some point is just ludicrous at
mm-hmm.
this point. This has been dragging on for months. If Chris Sook, who's extremely dedicated and loyal and conscientious, is qualified to be chief, at this point, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
We should just appoint him chief.
Just appoint him. It's your appointment. I'll vote to confirm you appoint him, that's for sure.
I went right by you, Stacey. I'm sorry. Did you have any thoughts or comments you wanted to add?
No, I think the other council members did a great job.
It's interesting when you read his email that each of us grabbed on a different clause in there to be disturbed about. And the one that I got is that he wants a commitment to a firehouse. And I just don't think it's within our ability to make that commitment because we have the committee that's pursuing it.
Mm-hmm.
Michael and Bob and I met with Millstone Fire Commissioner, and you know, we'll report out at the next meeting. We do not have the ability to make a commitment mm-hmm. that he's asking for, and so I think that we couldn't possibly agree to what he's looking for. So I don't think we can appoint him. And the other thing is that it comes back once again to what I objected to last time, and it's a lack of leadership.
Immature.
I mean, people may be willing to follow him as a leader into a fire, but a leader of the fire department is more than that. And that's what we're asking for, and I do not see it in that email. So I'm not willing to appoint him, and I'm willing to appoint Mr. Suk.
I don't know that we have...
Has he even acknowledged what we have done in the interim, the mobile mini and
the little jail?
The little yeah. jail and the tent and the heaters and all of these other provisions that we made very, very quickly, I think.
In fairness, I haven't had that discussion with them, but I haven't asked him those questions. I mean, I haven't said, you know, are you happy with this or unhappy with that? The conversation was limited to basically, you know, are you willing to give us a commitment? I didn't go very far beyond that. So I can't say that he either would or wouldn't. So. Mm-hmm. All right. I don't know that we have the authority to appoint the chief. We have the authority to approve or disapprove those that they elected, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to Rich to...
Well, I think your ordinance says... I can't recall. If you approve those that were elected.
Yeah.
Is that what it says? It's subject to approval?
Right.
So I think what you did before was a disapproval. But, you know, in light of the communication here, one possibility seems to be that there be a commitment, and with a commitment which doesn't seem to be able to be made at this point, and that therefore there seems to be a resignation here. Because the resignation is contingent on not getting the commitment, there is no commitment. So one possibility may be just simply accept the resignation.
So just by motion, say in effect that Mr. Suk is now the chief.
In that you're accepting the resignation, yeah. Yeah.
Or declining their offer of Mr. Archer as chief. Or should we just say both of those things?
Yes, you should say both of those things, I think.
Okay. All right. Does anybody want to make a motion that says, in essence...
I make the motion. I move that we accept the resignation of Mr. Archer as chief, and we...
specifically reject him as the elected
we
chief.
We reject him as the elected chief, and therefore we are affirming the... ascension of the assistant chief to be the chief, Mr. Suk.
The question I have about that is, he was...
Can we get a second before we open discussion?
Second.
Thank you. Okay. Is he resigning, or is it that he's not being appointed? Because if his term was for... If it's his term as chief expired at the end of the year, there's nothing to resign from.
We're basically saying both. That we're not approving the election of him as chief, and that to the extent there is any argument that he is chief nonetheless, that we're taking this as his resignation. We're basically arguing in the alternative.
Right.
Well, I mean, is there a basis for saying that he continues to be chief after the end of the calendar year?
None whatsoever, except for the fact that, in our opinion, or my opinion, no. But that doesn't mean we don't cover the bases.
Okay, I'm saying, in the event that he, I don't know. In the event that he's deemed to be chief, we regard him as...
Well, it can't be deemed. They voted him in. We said no.
I understand.
And, well, should we just put on this motion and then, okay, unless you want to amend the wording? Can I have a roll call?
Please, 1 second.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
An aye or a nay is... What are we voting, aye or nay?
We are vote. An aye says, Mr. Archer, thank you, but no thank you.
Aye is a resignation.
Correct.
Yes, I have it as accepting the resignation of Dan Archer as the chief and rejecting as Archer and affirming assistant chief Sook as acting chief. So a yay would be accepting the resignation of the former chief and affirming that the assistant chief will now take over as acting chief.
An aye is Chris Sook.
There you go.
So when would he become permanent chief, not
well,
acting?
Well, he is already the assistant chief.
Right, but why
we just want to make it clear that...
They need to vote. We need a vote.
Right, to wait for them.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about saying accepting his resignation, accepting his expression of lack of interest in serving as fire chief?
No, I think you better serve by saying accepting resignation.
All right, fine.
Questions, comments before we vote? Could you please call the roll?
Ms. Mona.
Aye.
Mr. Impelazzeri.
Aye.
Ms. Lapode.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tipton.
Aye.
Okay. New business. I know nothing about sustainable Jersey certification. I did not put it on, so.
That was me.
Okay.
So Sustainable Jersey is this organization where you can get points for all of the very important sustainable actions that you take, these actions being above what is regulatorily required. And there are all kinds of actions that you can take that would make your town more sustainable. You have named Eitan as head of the green committee and green team.
That's what they call it.
And there's like 10 points for that. But there's plenty
not for
of
naming me.
Well, I think so. I think you deserve them.
No, my mother would agree, but
rather than distribute this large thing, which is 27 pages of spreadsheets, and then the rest is
just it's supposed to be 54.
The 54 is blank pages. So it's only 27 of actual.
I did email that. All of council received it a few weeks ago.
So Eitan went through it, and he wrote down those actions which either are under consideration or are already active, or he has already submitted for points. And I went through the same spreadsheet, and I noted in the column additional actions, which I think that the borough could take. Easily, I came up with enough for 110 points with things that we either are doing or should be doing or would not take much effort. Things like establishing a creative team, the Roosevelt Arts Project, doing a creative assets inventory, the Roosevelt Arts Project website. We got 20 points right there. So in going through many of these issues, there are plenty of things that this community could do to become more sustainable. We could do an energy audit of this building. I think we do want to know. It doesn't say that we're going to act on the energy audit. It says that we're going to do an energy audit, and then we can put that into our thinking for longer term. How do we become more efficient in our energy usage in this space? Probably not in the jail, but things like community and school gardens.
things like a buy fresh, buy local program. We have a community shares agriculture right here in town. Why wouldn't we submit information about that? There's a historic preservation element. Our whole downtown is a historic preservation district. We should be able to get those points. Having smoke-free and tobacco-free public places. Well, we already are. So we just have to submit the evidence of that. Some of the actions that Eitan is contemplating are invasive species control, stream monitoring, perhaps rain gardens. Some of the things that, a natural resource inventory.
We've already done most of this, have we not?
Yeah.
The environmental resource inventory.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was submitted.
A community forestry plan and tree cover. That's part of the grant that they've proposed. But here's one that we could do pretty easily. Establish a green purchasing policy by ordinance. It would be an ordinance that we would, that the products we would use to clean this room would not be hazardous to people's health. They would be an environmentally preferable cleaning products. We get 10 points for that. Using recycled paper. I'm going to use the back of these.
10 points.
10 points, right there. Improving public engagement in municipal government. We're putting together a website to put all our documents on. 10 points. A prescription drug safety and disposal. We could have people bring their unused prescription drugs and have these bags that you could send them back to the manufacturers and they dispose of them properly. 10 points. I think with the number of senior citizens in town, they might not be able to dispose of their drugs. They should not put them down the toilet. And so just to protect my sewage treatment plant, I think this would be a great thing to do. Having a community paper shredding day. Lots of people have sensitive stuff that they would like to have shredded, but they don't always get over to the county shredding place on Saturdays. We could have one day where we at least get prices for having a shredder come and people could bring their. Recycling education and enforcement. We kind of need that. I think there's a lot of recycling material that's going in people's trash that should not be. A grass cut it and leave it program. Anyway, 110 points easily. We need 150 points for a bronze certification. So if any of the council members would like to go through this and propose additional things, it would be great if we could be recognized for a bronze certification. But even if we're not recognized, the kinds of things that we would do in the Sustainable Jersey program are good things we should be doing anyway. That's what it's all about.
Ms. Cipriani just mentioned that we have gotten an email from the county. They're looking for somebody to do basically a shredding event. On December 3, which is a little far in the future, but gives us plenty of time to get our paper together. So you guys might want to talk about whether we can get the county to pay for it by just bringing in a truck from Iron Mountain or whatever. Okay, next on new business, automated CPR device. Very quickly, as many of you know, there's always a dearth of volunteers. Not a dearth of volunteers, but there can be a dearth of volunteers who can show up at any particular ambulance call. They only need two people, basically, to run the rig. It's not the best option, but it works. But that means one in the front driving, one in the back. If the person in the back has to give CPR, I don't know how many of you attended the CPR class. It is exhausting. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to keep up for a long period of time. And while you are doing that, it is virtually impossible to do anything else with the patient. So if you've got one person in the back and he's trying to plug in a line, he's trying to do anything, bag at the same time that he's doing bagging, meaning pushing oxygen into you, at the same time he's doing CPR. It is exceedingly difficult to begin with, even more difficult when there's only one of you, and add into that a moving vehicle, and it's just a royal pain, and it is not in any of our best interests that our first aiders cannot perform whatever they need to perform on us on the way to the hospital. I've had some conversations with first aid, and one of the things that would be exceedingly helpful with this is what's called an automated CPR machine. And we have a picture of it somewhere, but basically it straps around the patient, and it has a plunger that just goes boom, 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 boom. What it does is it allows it's battery-powered. It allows the first aider to get that on your chest, start pumping, and I'm saying you are, so you all take it personally because it may be personal, to get the CPR going and to keep it going on the way to the hospital while you're doing everything else that needs to be done for that patient. Total cost is between $12,000 and $15,000. We have $10,000 that we have previously put away for eventual purchase of a new rig. And the reason we do that is, although the first aid department has done an incredible job of getting grants and loans to buy their rigs, there's often a small portion that's got to be contributed or paid by the municipality, or they otherwise need to make a cash payment that they don't have. Based on conversations that I have had with first aid, and I assume that they've been discussed with you as well, John, okay. What I proposed was taking up to $7,500 of that amount from the capital account, having the borrow match, which we already have reserved, have the borrow match with an additional up to $7,500, depending upon which piece of equipment they get, which brings them up to the maximum of $5,000. It may be a little less, but we devote the $7,500. I've already talked to our CFO, to George Lang. He says we have the funds available. And I would like to propose that we authorize that expenditure subject to whatever appropriate resolution we have to make, because I just think it's very important that all of us have, one, the protection that first aid is supposed to provide to us, and two, putting aside that they're not paid, it's nonetheless very difficult at certain times of the day to get people down here to cover it. I mean, we have sometimes have Kelly driving the rig. I, from time to time, have been in the rig to give directions because only one person could show up. Remember what your schedules are like during the day. So, but we do, and for those of you who don't know, I mentioned earlier that I'd had that meeting with the mayor over in Millstone. I think we did, was it last year, we did 80 calls in Roosevelt and 154 I may be off a little bit in Millstone. We have people going all over the place. So the more we can do to help them with the emergency equipment, the better. I don't think this is a particularly exotic. I mean, it's exotic to me, but I think it's performing a pretty basic function that all of us could, unfortunately, probably use at some point in the future. So I think I have to ask somebody to make a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Authorize up to $7,500 from our budget and $7,500 from the capital account.
Okay. Make the motion.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
And could you, I'm not sure we need a roll, but let's call the roll anyway.
Ms. Bona.
Aye.
Mr. Impavazzara.
Aye.
Ms. Lapodi.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tichter.
Aye.
Great. Water consumption report?
I have
report?
A question now that
yes,
the
ma'am.
Thing has passed. Is it possible if Millstone actually ponies up some money that we could dedicate it back to the capital fund so that we could kind of replenish that?
It depends on what First Aid wants to do. I mean, it's their priority. Are we getting a new rig in the next 2 years?
Right.
And the comment I got back was it was at least they've put in for a series of grants. It's going to be at least a year, maybe up to two. During which time we can replenish it, so we have a little
okay.
latitude. But yeah, I don't want to count those chickens, but we'll keep pushing them.
I'm just curious: does it work as well as manual CPR?
It works better.
Does it?
Mm. Because when you do it for a long time, the force you push down is less.
You get tired.
Manual CPR gives you a 31% efficiency rate. The machine gives an 88% efficiency rate.
Wow.
That's better.
Basically, what I tell you to do is start doing push-ups as fast as you can do them and do it for a half hour.
And if you slide the device down over the waist, can it serve as a weight loss device? Because then we can supplement the next model.
Okay.
But then we can get people to subscribe to it.
Okay.
It's just another aid.
I've never used that before. Sorry.
Because you have to understand that the great thing about this town is it's out in the woods, if you will. The bad thing about it is it's out in the woods. So transferring from here to such a state. And you have to understand when you're doing CPR, you can't be doing 60 miles an hour down the road. We're now doing 30, 35 miles an hour down the road, so we don't kill the person doing CPR.
Mr. Lincoln, we have approved it. The only thing that you could possibly do is get us to unimprove it. Okay. Water consumption report, July through December. I assume that's also you, Jill?
Yes, you have a copy of the water consumption report, and that was put together actually so that we could look at whether or not we want to consider adjusting the bills. It's interesting to me. I mean, if you look at the minimum bills for vacant or no readings, you see that in November and December, it looks like 39 houses were vacant or there were no readings. Actually, November and December, we had some meters that went bad. So, you know, you have to read this report and you say, it's not, there's a level of uncertainty with the numbers that you're looking at. But nevertheless, the minimum bill of 6,000 gallons to 12,000 gallons is the majority, and then you go up from there. For people that are using over 24,000 gallons, either they've got a leak in their house, their toilet's running, something, that's a lot of water. Although in July and August, you could be using it to water your lawn.
Or fill a pool.
Yeah. Although a lot of people don't fill a pool with the water from our water system, they get a truck of water brought in.
Well, I didn't mean necessarily a built-in pool, but
right.
Some people have large or medium-sized bathrooms.
Yeah.
I want to add. I'm sorry. You.
I'm done.
Okay. Add to new business. We received a letter from the tenants in the apartment above the deli. I don't think the council needs to take any action on that, but you saw that, didn't you, John? I was absolutely confused.
This is the letter?
Yeah.
Okay.
By what it was that they were asking for. But I think we simply proceed with the eviction. And basically, if you read the letter, it makes little sense. My favorite is number five. We do understand and will consent to a constructive eviction. We understand that the eviction is based on the township stipulations. A constructive eviction is what you, for all of you landlord lawyers, know, is what the tenant uses as a defense to not paying. In other words, you didn't give me any heat. You constructively evicted me. Therefore, I don't have to pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
So for the tenant to consent to a constructive eviction just doesn't make any sense. But I think what we need to do is just proceed with what John is doing and get him out.
Is John pursuing the violation notice against the landlord? And
right. It's interesting. The lease is signed by the landlord, Jason Ragaglia.
Who never took possession.
Who has no ownership interest.
Right, exactly.
So they have a lease with somebody who doesn't own the building.
Right.
For, anyway, okay.
But that's their problem.
That's their problem, not our problem.
Right. No, I just want to say that it's important that he pursue the action against the landlord to the point and bring him to court and get a penalty. And the reason I'm saying that is because under the fair cost for under the relocation laws, in order to recover, and assuming if they were to, you know, show they were eligible for relocation expense, which is a possibility, they for the borough to recover relocation costs from the property owner, you have to take them, you know, through the whole penalty process and, you know, get a judgment for a penalty against them.
Right. The
so
problem.
It's important that be done.
The problem is, in part, you are using the word owner and landlord interchangeably. That is not the case.
Right.
So the owner is Gade, but the landlord, or the.
Well, the landlord is still the owner. Is still the landlord. And the owner is still the. It's still the corporation of Gade's. The Brahano Realtors is the. That's the land. That's the owner of the land. That's the landlord. This guy. He may be the person they're paying the rent to, maybe in effect an intermediary or a manager or somebody purporting to be the in charge. But
no, we know exactly who he is.
We know.
No,
but we don't know what the lease says.
I know
says.
We did. I understand. Right.
We don't know what the lease says.
I know,
but
exactly. But I'm saying the landlord is who the landlord is. So
yeah.
And the landlord is allowing, regardless of who, whether they're saying they're paying, whether Ricaglia signed it or what, the landlord is still presumed to have knowledge that his property is being occupied and, you know, so he's still responsible. That or they or whatever, that entity is still responsible.
But we're already
yeah.
going through that process, are we not, John?
Yeah, Mr. Marini, I think, already issued the letter
yeah.
to Mr. Gotti.
Okay.
Right.
Being that he's the landowner.
Right.
Sounds like Mr. Ricaglia is sort of just like the superintendent.
Now, Ricaglia was the guy who was going to lease it and run a deli there.
I remember that, but if he's just collecting
the
rent.
And
the
caterer,
rent.
Yes,
yeah.
the Bridezilla man, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm just saying that they he has to follow through and go the whole way to the penalty, or else it could be a problem for the borough.
I believe that the landlord could be located in is it the county prison or the state prison?
The county
department guy said he's fine. Okay. Public comment. Does anybody in the public have anything they'd like to say? Yes.
I have a question
Mayor.
For Captain Lowe. Not everyone was able to make your...
I'm sorry, Mayor. You may have forgotten. Would you please come to the... the microphone said your name and address.
Elspeth.
Civilian.
64 Lake Drive. Oh, 66, whatever. One of the two. For Captain Lowe. Or for the council to ask Captain Vogt, will there be any more training classes for CPR and the AED machine?
I have to ask Jack. The training is once a year. It's once a year, so I mean.
I'm thinking more in terms of for the public rather than the squad. In other words, public rather than professional.
Oh, okay. I will have to ask Jack. He's doing the training guy for us.
So. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
They just had one 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So,
Would it be useful, though, for at least the council to learn how to use that thing that's sitting over there?
And the employees.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm missing something. We had a training session 3 weeks ago for council and the public right here.
On the AED?
Absolutely.
Oh.
CPR and AED.
Huh.
So I think we have to go back to Jack and ask if he'll do it again.
Just the AED part, I guess?
No, I'd love if everybody learned CPR. But at least, and I don't think we ought to teach them, they ought to learn AED without the CPR.
Well, yeah, I mean.
It's up to you guys.
It go together, the AED and the bag and the.
Yeah, I'll see if we can schedule
a question. I've been both AED and CPR certified over the years a number of times. It seems like you don't even really need to have any kind of knowledge or certification at all for the AED. You turn it on and it tells you step by step exactly what to do, when to do it, and it seems to
one
have
problem.
Safeties.
One problem. If it goes wrong and you've had the training, you are immune from suit.
Protected, yeah.
If it goes wrong and you have not taken the course, they can sue you. So,
well, also
so that's the
that's a biggie. Yeah.
Okay.
Also, I mean, don't get me wrong, but if you somewhere and somebody is laying there, they're not, they're, you know, unresponsive, you know, you don't want to be like open up the AED and kind of waiting for the instruction and kind of like, okay, now I do this, you know. Like pretty much you need the training, and you just when we do, we don't even listen to the voice. We just, cause the training just kicks in, you just do it, you know. Because the police is going to be there, other people are going to be there, you know. It's not gonna, and probably relatives are going to be there, you know, standing there crying. They don't want to be sitting there. We listen to the voice and go, okay, put this here. Now what next, you know? That's just my opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Connors, you have your...
My name is Mark Connors. I live in Rochdale. I'm actually asking for something from First Aid Squad point of view. We had a call by the cemetery, which required the state police to support us. And they gladly did. And half of the reporting troopers couldn't find it.
Couldn't find the
cemetery. Sign was gone for the street.
The
so I don't know who does that. I don't know whether we hire. I don't know if Kelly does that. I don't know if Hightstown does that. I don't know who does that, but in this town particularly, it's very important. And the reason I'm saying that is because the troop commander and I had a discussion once everything was calmed down, we were there, because he was late getting there, and he says, I was okay until I got to a certain point, and then my GPS on my phone went south when I got around here. When I was going to the near call, there were three troop cars coming back and forth looking for the street, driving by it, because they'd actually driven into the street thinking, well, maybe that's it. And they got the little cul-de-sac thing there, and turned around, came back out, not realizing it, they had to go further.
Do we?
So it's very important, especially in a small town like, and I know everybody in this room, if I said you had to go to the cemetery, you'd know where to go. However, the troopers come from Trenton, they come from all over the place, they could be from any other barracks, there's a sign here at the time, they don't know that. So it's very, very important that street signs, things like that, are maintained higher than it would be on a normal place, because the police department that's in town knows that, but we use troopers, which are great and are very supportive, but so we need to maintain those, and we're having more and more trouble finding houses for numbers. So again, I'm going to ask that we ask people to put up big numbers on your house. A lot of houses don't have any numbers, and when they do, they're about this big, and they're 50 feet off the road, and it's like, okay, my eyesight's not that good. You know, John's isn't, so we need help with that. And as far as the CPR training goes, because Jack and I actually had that discussion, he has tried to do this before. He is willing to do this, and I'm going to help him do it. The problem is he's had no response. So I'm sure if you come up with a group of people, and he knows we're going to have 6 or 10 people, well, we want to do it. It's just like anything else, though. Everybody says we want it. Then we come down here, we set it up, nobody shows up. So I'm not going to speak for Jack except for the fact that we actually talked about this, because we had talked about getting people trained on that, and we were very glad to see people from the borough, and we had a lot of young firemen here we're helping. He's probably willing to do it. It's just a question of getting people to commit to say, yes, I'm going to be here. Okay. And you don't have, we don't have to give you the same CPR training that you get for First Aid Squad. There are different levels, which makes it quicker, easier, and yet you know enough to do what you need to do. Okay.
Thank you. Is there anybody else from the public? Do we need a closed session?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We stand adjourned at 8:28.